You're listening to WCOM FM 103.5, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. You're listening to WCOM FM 103.5, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. The comments, views, and opinions on this program may not represent those of WCOM, its board, and underwriters.
Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. I'm a small business owner, entrepreneur, radio show host, columnist, book author, and a business consultant. And each show, I want to bring to you people and insights that impact how you do business and how you run your business and how our community grows through small businesses and businesses of all size. And my guest today is Benjamin M. Coulter, EDD, and he currently serves as the Chancellor of Western Governors University, North Carolina, and the Regional Director of WGU's Southeast Region. For the past 25 plus years, Dr. Ben Coulter has worked in a variety of positions in and surrounding higher education. Before this current position at WGU, he was Vice President of Global Initiatives at a privately held LLC in the United Kingdom, where he led initiatives centered on expanding professional development opportunities into higher education for faculty and professional staff. He developed higher education-focused social networking online platform. He facilitated changes in methodologies, strategies, and teaching practices with post-secondary educators across Europe, the Middle East, India, Australia, and the United States. Dr. Coulter formerly was also the Executive Director of Higher Education Initiatives at Watermark Insights, LLC, and there his responsibilities included direct consultation with universities and colleges in areas related to outcome assessment, institutional accountability, discipline-specific accreditation, and faculty reappointments, tenure, and promotions. In his position at Watermark, Coulter worked with a broad cross-section of the U.S. and international institutions, encompassing all Carnegie classifications, regional and international accreditation agencies, multi-campus and state-level university systems, and with all levels of university and college faculty, staff, and senior administrators. Before his work at Watermark, Coulter was at Western Carolina University here in North Carolina, where he served in dual roles as Director of Instructional Technology and as Assistant Professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Foundations. As the Director of Instructional Technology, he consulted with senior university leadership, college and school administrators, and program faculty on methods for integration of innovative learning technologies to improve teaching, learning, and for the collection analysis of the longitudinal data related to those outcome assessments and student performance. He also served as a state-level board member of the University of North Carolina System for Academic Technology Advisory Board. He was chair of the Academic Technology Committee and was the principal investigator and administrator of four successfully awarded U.S. Department of Education collaborative grants totaling over $10 million. As assistant professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Foundations, he taught courses at the master's and doctoral levels in adult and community education, higher education administration, educational organization and leadership, instructional design, and directed graduate level practicums, internships, and research. He earned his undergraduate degree in political science and international law from the Idaho State University, his master's degree in organizational development from Western Carolina University, and his doctoral degree in higher education administration from NC State. And he is also a retired a member of the United States Army, and he was a military intelligence officer in the field of counterintelligence. And I just know from that background and from all of his accomplishments, we're going to learn a lot from Dr. Coulter today. And I want to thank Dr. Ben Coulter for being on the program today. And just, Ben, we're going to just talk through all of your experiences and how that transition from the military into the civilian workforce works, the needs of North Carolina workforce, and the challenges that are facing adult learners as they're developing new skills, and the challenges for institutions teaching adult learners and the military personnel in transition. And we also want to learn more about what's going on at WGU and under your leadership, and just, well, we're just going to get to know you, your organization, and your life experiences and professional insights for all of us. And again, thank you, Dr. Ben Coulter, for being on the program today.
We're just going to jump into your complex and fascinating topic and the crucial aspects of adult learning, workforce needs, the veterans workforce in transition. And so let's just start by framing our entire conversation today about what the future of our workforce needs are here in North Carolina, the region, the United States, and even the world. So I'm going to let you take it away and we'll just have a wonderful conversation here.
Well, that's great. Well, there are, you know, obviously unique needs here within our state. There's a tremendous amount of shortages in the workforce in different sectors. We have a lot of industry that's coming into North Carolina and growth opportunities. We have several shortage areas in the workforce here in North Carolina. And in relation to our four academic degree program areas, we have IT, business, healthcare, and teacher education. There's a tremendous shortage in teachers, nurses. Nurses is an interesting problem. There's traveling nurses that can leave hospitals and clinics and go make, you know, $3,000 to $7,000 a week, which is a big problem for having continuity in nursing staff locally. Business has, as I said, there's new industry coming into North Carolina almost weekly, a great deal of economic development across the state that offer new opportunities and jobs. And the IT sector is very much alive and well. And again, those are shortage areas, especially for people who have certifications and credentials that are necessary for those highly skilled positions.
So I know I do a lot of work with the veterans and transitioning military. So they come out with so many skills and stuff, but often we find their certifications in the private sector do not mesh up. You know, they have to go through, you know, EMT school, all of this different things. So that coming together and your WGU giving life experience type credits and those kind of things and recognizing that, you know, we can get to our ages and not have a degree, but we have all this experience out there that doesn't fit in the normal system. So talk about the military in transition, our veterans, all these different communities and stuff rich with experience. And how does that mesh in to making more people available in the workforce?
Well, great question. I appreciate that. And I am retired from the military, so I can speak from that perspective as well as an educator. WGU is unique that we have a competency-based education model, which really is not based on credit hours and seat time, a semester model, but it's really more on developing and demonstrating competency and master of skills. So people that come from the military in this case, as you mentioned, have a very deep skill set, not just life experiences, but hard skills. And they can leverage those throughout our courses. And if they can demonstrate mastery or understanding to a degree of the concepts within a course, they can do a very accelerated time frame going from starting the program to finishing it in a very abbreviated period of time.
Well, talk about your experience coming out of the military, transitioning, and then what you're seeing about your veteran, you know, brothers and sisters coming out too, and the challenges are there in those technology, the nursing, and those kind of segments that they can fit into so well.
Great. Well, there is a lot of different, I call them barriers actually, for veterans that are coming out of service. part of it is environmental, where they're trying to find a goodness of fit, trying to find their place in civilian life where they may not have really had, you know, an adult professional experience as far as a career path. So part of the problem is just, where do I start? What should I do? And I went through that very same thing. Was there, and there's a lot of, in fact, sometimes it's, there's so many opportunities, it's trying to figure out which one's the best for you, which one will provide the most happiness and satisfaction and all those things. So there's, I think, the environmental challenge of just, this feels different to me. This is not a military environment, and there's a whole ecosystem within the military that you get accustomed to.
That structure is not there. When to show up, what to wear, how your hair is cut, all of that kind of stuff, right?
The discipline and even the pace of how things happen is markedly different. In civilian world, things go at a bit slower pace. In the military, it seems to be, you know, for obvious reasons, things happen very quickly, and you develop acumen to respond to that in that kind of same pace. So being able to fit in, being able to understand where your place is, that's not going to be a compromise, but you're looking for something that will really be satisfying for you and match up with your abilities. And those challenges are also true for military spouses. So we're not just talking about veterans, but their family, and especially military spouses. We actually have scholarships that are developed especially for military spouses to help them with their academic programs, and as well as veterans. We have, I think, 7 or 8 different, you know, standalone scholarship programs for veterans. Gold Star families. So we cover a good continuum of military financial assistance beyond what they might receive from the government. And my experience in the government was I didn't sign up for the GI Bill, and my dad, who was a university president and chancellor at 4 different places, was insistent that I sign up for it. And this is when I first went in the military. And so he convinced me that I probably needed more than a bachelor's degree someday, and I'm glad he did.
Well, and when we're looking at that, it's the financial, it's finding that fit. How does WGU help the spouse make that transition, help the military person that's going to soon be a veteran? How are those conversations, that advising and stuff, how does that take place? Is that virtual? Can they connect from anywhere in the world? You know, what's going on with that?
Well, we have a number of things I think are very advantageous to help people from the military consider the next step in their life or their career pathway, including spouses. One thing, we have something called Strategic Partnership Managers, and they are located in our area in the Southeast and here in North Carolina that partner with different veterans agencies, organizations, support groups, and military installations that have all that infrastructure already in place. So we're working with them and being a presence even before people, you know, actually come off active duty, and they will have awareness and in proximity to us in conversation. We have a tremendous support structure for our enrollment counselors that are very personable, very knowledgeable, more than I've ever seen in higher education. And those may be phone calls or virtual meetings, but we're out there and we're recognized and known. And I think that visibility helps veterans and spouses say, what's going on with Western Governors University? And also the amount of degree programs and offerings that we have are really quite expanse. So our job with enrollment counselors is really to kind of match up and find the best fit. We take a very student-centric approach to working with learners. Our typical age of learners is 37 years old, so they're not coming out of high school. But they've had, again, some very significant life experiences in the case of military folks, and we recognize that and honor that.
That's fabulous. So we have this vast pool of military people coming in, but we also have others that are displaced out of other careers where industries are changing. And you were talking about this, we have a lot of innovation, even in our agricultural industries and things here in North Carolina and around the country. that technology is starting to become a part of that. Who would think of drones, right, in the agricultural segment? But all of that kind of overlaps when we have all of this in there. So how does WGU, how does your experience with all of that translate into these average age 37 learners coming in and finding their place and finding their next career, their next path, or the enhancement of their current career?
Well, again, WGU is uniquely positioned to help in that area. We have very flexible degree and academic programs that are, you know, kind of in job ready, job skilled areas. Technology is one example that you brought up, that our cybersecurity program is the number one enrolled program for our military members or military affiliated students here in North Carolina. By a long shot. There are embedded degrees, credentials within those degree programs. One interesting thing is that you have an accelerator, you can go at your own pace. So we work on 6-month terms. So again, unlike a traditional education program where I have to take 3 classes to 5 classes, you know, and then wait till the next semester, and then that class, doggone, it's not available. Our programs, our degree programs start every month. We have open enrollment every month. WG averages over 8,000 students per month enrolling and starting a program. And so they have the ability to take as many courses in that 6-month time period as they can handle. And we have program mentors, which might be called advisors, but they're so much more than that. They go through the complete program with an individual student. They are a coach, a mentor, a whole package. Well, it can be a peer for sure. And we try to make those alignments as best we can, but they are, you know, there's part of that is some accountability, which actually in the military is something that you're very used to.
The military guys are always telling me that's one of the biggest things when they come out, male or female, that peer, that camaraderie, that fit in a unit or a battalion or whatever, that when that's not there, that context is an issue for them, that support system.
Yes, absolutely. And again, that's why I think it creates that condition of, Where do I go? What do I do? And they have tremendous skills, and the work ethic that you have coming out of the military is undeniable.
But it sounds like WGU is putting some of that structure there, having that program manager, having advisors, having connectivity to be flexible there and recognize what that individual's needing, which is really necessary as we become adult learners, right?
Sure. And it's really interesting when I'm talking with students, usually graduates, when I'm talking with graduates, the first thing they will mention, because I asked them about what their WG experience was like, they said, my program mentor made every difference in me being successful and finishing. And they just, they can't stop talking about their program mentor. And if you would talk to any other college student or graduate, they wouldn't likely say my academic advisor was the one that, you know, held the light for me and showed me the way to go. But in our case, our program mentors are really just the superstars. Our course instructors are subject matter experts. We're fully accredited. All of our courses and degrees have a great deal of rigor built into them. So anyway, we have a very quality program. One other thing that's not known about WGU so well is that we're a nonprofit university. We are a fully online university, but a lot of people categorize that in just one big world of online universities. And sadly, some of those for-profit universities have given the whole lot a bad name. So we distinguish ourselves by being a nonprofit, private, fully online, fully accredited university. In fact, we're the largest online university in the country. And we have over 136,000 active students and over 270,000 graduates. And here in North Carolina, we're just tapped over 6,000 graduates here in our state and North Carolina citizens. And so we feel we're contributing to the workforce needs and the state need for My Future NC with the goal of 2 million highly certified or credentialed degree citizens by the year 2030. So we have great things that we're doing here for citizens in North Carolina, and WGU in general across the 50 states, it has that to scale.
Well, when we think about it with our listeners of businesses, nonprofits, small businesses here in the area, and they may be the owner or the leaders, and they're looking for that skilled workforce, or maybe it's somebody in one of those businesses wanting to take their lives to the next level and trying to figure this out. What is that interaction that they can reach out to WGU and talk about their workforce needs, you know, how to educate their current employees, or maybe it's someone wanting to, you know, switch jobs and stuff. How can they interact with your team and figure out what that is? And then in the bigger context, how is WGU executing that 2030 mission of getting more people in and getting more people educated?
Well, the first part of your question is we have a dedicated team here in North Carolina. We're actually also in the Southeast. We're WG is organized in a 7-region model with our 4 academic colleges. So we have the Southeast region, and here in North Carolina, we have staff that delivery goes out and creates partnerships with different organizations. They are active with local chambers and economic development boards. We're also active with NC Tech, with the North Carolina Chamber, with the Rural Initiative. So we're trying to, and it's interesting, as I've been on the job a year now. And okay. So part of my learning curve is just, it's like looking up at the sky at night. There are so many organizations and agencies, many of them are doing very parallel things, but we're trying to be as active and visible as we can. And so that a proximity and relationships helps drive students to think about us as an option, but also keeps us aware of workforce needs that are ever changing and new industry coming in that we might hear about or learn about with economic development boards that we can take and help translate that into revised curriculum that is very much matched with the needs either now or what we forecast down the road.
And so when we're thinking about those programs, and I'm a small business and cybersecurity, let's our nursing, you know, and those kind of things. We have so much demand for the medical profession and our research institutions, our CROs. You know, we just came through COVID with vaccines and still testing of that and those kind of things. And as you were talking about traveling nurses, but those core nurses in our hospitals and our clinics and our doctor's offices, all of that demand that's there. And then we also have cybersecurity that's really going across every level of every type of business or personal. So with those two hot markets, are you actively recruiting? How are you working to get the word out on those high demand, high opportunity areas?
Well, we have a lot of different channels that we do for marketing, if you will, to make ourselves known and the degree programs that we offer. And we highlight how we, the differentiators between other opportunities for post-secondary ed and WGU with a kind of a shorter start to attainment timeframe. Our cost structure is incredibly lower than most other
institutions. How much does it normally cost debt-wise for people to go back to school and comparatively to what is, because that's something I hear from everybody. It's like, well, I can't afford a student loan. I can't afford the time. So right. If I'm going to make these switches, even if I'm already a nurse and I want to take it to the next level, talk a little bit about that too in the context of what you're talking about.
Well, our average cost per 6-month term is about $3,800. So, you know, 9,000, somewhere in that line. And it's a flat fee tuition. So every 6 months, there's a flat fee. It's all inclusive. It's not like you're getting a cell phone bill every month.
Or your cable bill, right? That says, oh,
yeah, that's right.
Right. Yeah, right.
So that's one thing. The other is that we offer a truckload of scholarship opportunities that help support that fee structure that we have, the tuition. And so we've had, you know, students graduate WG with an average of debt of around $11,500, which is quite low compared to the national average.
What is the national average now? Around 40?
It's somewhere 38, somewhere like that. Okay. So there's a huge difference Also noteworthy is that the two-year average salary increase from WGU after graduation is $12,500. The average four-year salary increase for a graduate is over $22,000. So again,
more than pays for
it. ROI, if you will, that the students can that we can share with the students. But again, our programs are built to be flexible for adult learners, in line with the workforce needs. We're out there engaged within the community at the national level and at the state level here in North Carolina, and trying to always keep apprised and up to date on the changes that are happening that ebb and flow almost daily. But we have cut things like a customized MBA program that we offer that can be tailored to a specific business, and we have, you know, the 5250 tax credit that they can leverage if they want to send a cohort of their employees to come for an MBA, and they don't have to send them away. They're in front of a computer and they're doing instruction. So we have different things like that, I think, that incentivize and make getting the appropriate degree or education as easy as possible, but still rigorous and accredited.
Well, and now that our workforce knows they're needing more education, there's more opportunity. Part of retaining our qualified workforce is comes into those benefit programs, where this fits into that, where people need to get educated and helping them advance, take it to a higher level to get compensated higher, tailored to probably what my business needs if I'm putting a group of my employees in there to get it. So that's a win-win for the employee, for the employer, for the community, the tax base, all the way around.
And we see, you know, it's really interesting. And if I take a step back, from my long years in education, online learning was when we first started doing it, you know, 100 years ago or 20
yeah.
years.
It just feels like it's 100 years.
especially nowadays. But at back then, there was so much pushback from faculty about, well, you can teach that program online, but you can't teach mine. Mine is unique. I'm a unique flower, and it's just, yeah. There's no way. And through the pandemic, we've seen a gravitation towards online learning and really validation that it is an acceptable means, especially for adult education, that these are working adults, and it can accommodate a lot of those needs that they have, family, they're working a job. Those things are built into our model to help accommodate that. So the other big thing I was going to mention is the skills-based, we're part of the Open Skills Network, and I see a great big transition from kind of traditional degree programs to skills-based credentials and the ability for a student to document those skills and competencies that they pick up throughout their coursework that they can take with them like an attainment wallet or a portfolio as an official record or document. So it's not just a loose leaf binder they put together. And that actually used to be the norm some years back, but we're working very closely in the Open Skills Network and with major employers to develop an open skills architecture that allows employers to identify the skills and competencies for a given position. It informs education and training institutions that say, well, okay, here's our curriculum. Which skills and competencies do we have built into our curriculum? And how do we make those a match? So how do we articulate what we're teaching, hard skills, what certifications do we have embedded, and how do those match highly qualified, you know, positions and get the best candidates in front of the employers? And I think that's a trend that I've seen across North Carolina. There's a lot of movement and a lot of effort being put in. When we talk about workforce development, it's almost synonymous with skills attainment and a skills gap. So we're very switched into that. And it's part of our DNA, frankly, because all of our courses are competency based, and those competencies are readily identified. In fact, some of our IT degree, most of our IT degree programs have multiple credentials that are built into it. So if I go through a business and computer science or a bachelor's in computer science program, I may pick up 13 credentials. And we actually use those credentials in many cases as the final exam of that course. So it's, that's probably the, standard of how you demonstrate mastery. Can you pass the certification test for this ability? And that cost is included in their tuition and fees. So we don't charge, you have to take this $300 test. It's all included. Plus, if they don't do well the first time, we give them a voucher and they have a second chance to take the exam when they'd like to. But that concept of embedding even the certification exams within courses. So, a student comes out with a bachelor's degree in computer science or networking administration or cybersecurity, and they have a stack of credentials that are completely relevant and current with what employers need.
Well, and that's so valuable, because so many times in the traditional, and I have more letters after my name than in my name, so I can pick on all of the traditional programs too. But you come out and you move it, and a position may say must be a CPA or CMA or have your master's or whatever. But then they come in and okay, they can turn on the computer and they can do social media. But they can't do an account as an accountant. They haven't had exposure to accounting systems, or whether that's QuickBooks or that's an SAP or some of the Oracles or those kind of things. And so if they don't come in with a skill set that's practical when they sit down, it's still weeks or months or even years before they get to that point. But if they come out, and I'm not gonna say your system has this, but if you came out with an accounting degree, and part of those milestones are certain credentials, are certain certifications on certain types of accounting systems, you're QuickBooks certified or whatever that curriculum would be, then I'm not paying them at six figures for a year to get to the point of knowing how to do a journal entry or what a T account is, in theory versus in practice. And I always tell my CPA firms if I'm in the room drawing a T of a T account, mm-hmm. someone's in trouble. Because it should have already been done in the analysis.
Sure, of course. Right?
And so that's
the problem is that, that if you, and I think that's really where the conversation is changing. And it's interesting to hear that, but degrees are still valued, and there's certainly every reason to get a degree, but being able to also have those credentials, and we do have an accounting program, by the way, but being able to have those credentials to walk in to an employer who has a vacancy and say, here are the things, and I can demonstrate it, and here's the proof of my mastery of it. As you just said, they don't have to send that employee back out to get training or say, gosh, I'm sorry, we can't, we need you to have X, Y, and Z, and you don't, so we can't hire you. And
the smaller the business is, the more that person has to be able to hit the ground running when they bring them in. And so if that's an accounting degree, or it's an IT degree, or maybe it's a small CRO startup that's bringing in a nurse or whatever, the longer it takes for them to have an ROI inside the business, the more vulnerable that business is. And so that roles and skill-based analysis that businesses need to do, it's like you're not hiring a body, you're hiring skill sets. And that's
yes, there's
so
a holistic
critical.
Person and name, and if yeah. they have those the great things, the attributes that a person brings, their personality and their abilities, but also if they have hard certificates and credentials, they also have those bona fides that make them highly qualified candidate, versus somebody who might walk in with just a degree in something. And then you have to kind of scratch your head and say, well, let's go a little deeper and tell me what you have done or what you, and so I think it helps identify the best qualified candidates.
Well, and in the old days, when I got my master's, we could sit in the classes and know those of us who had taken, say, 3 to 5 years of work experience, saved our money, most of us still had to borrow money to do the master's program. We're going full time, but when we were discussing something, whether that was HR or statistics or economics, everybody in the room knew when someone who hadn't ever worked was talking about it versus someone who had been in a leadership role or, had to do something. And that made a difference in what stuck with us and how productive we were when we came out with our degrees.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I couldn't agree more. I used to teach graduate level programs at the master's and doctoral levels. and at Western Carolina University. And teaching graduate school was a delight because just for that very reason, students would come in and they were already either working or they had a great deal of experience in whatever the content was, and they had things to contribute. And that's the case actually at WG with all of our programs, bachelor and graduate. It still has that same phenomenon of having adult learners who have life experiences, work experiences. It enriches, you know, their learning and also their peers.
As one of my coworkers says, they have the Velcro on their brain for the concepts to stick and then be able to take and analyze and say, well, you know, in my past experience, you know, and this, and then if you're telling me this, then they'll even blow holes in the theories, right? It's like, okay, you know,
realistically,
that's not going to happen in such a, and it's like whether that we're talking diversity initiatives or, you know, automating, you know, AI and Internet of Things and stuff, that experience makes the conversation richer with your peers and the content of what's being developed and taking things to the next level. So is that the next level for the workforce? It's not just degreed people. Because we can spit out degreed people left and right. We do that every year, but we still have a skills gap. Right?
That was my background. I mean, most people, you know, up to this point, or maybe you have a degree, but, you know, being able to articulate which skills and competencies you have in a very distinct way. I do believe that's the trend. I don't think that degrees will ever be discounted or to the point that you don't need to get a degree. However, we do see some students that will go through, an IT program, and they will go through four or five courses and stack up 13 credentials. And they may be a very attractive and highly qualified candidate at that point that they may elect to leave and go, you know, go to the job and start, you know, working. But obviously we encourage degree completion, but they can do that again with our structure of 6-month term. So they can, we don't encourage them to just take on the world. I mean, the program managers are there to help kind of pace them and to make it as accelerated as they'd like to, but still attainable, and still get the essence of what's being taught. But I believe that skills architecture, there's actually something called the rich skills descriptor, which is, it's kind of, if I'm liking it to the early days of the internet, that you had different languages on the internet, HTTP and all these things that didn't really talk with each other that well. And these were again in the early days, but then there was kind of protocols that were established that allowed for many things to hit for interoperability. And so what I see in the skills gap area now is that we're developing skills libraries that do that articulation. And there's something called rich skill identifiers, which are standards and competencies that are becoming industry known protocols, if you will, so that if I call something an apple over here and an apple with the employer, it's an apple through and
everywhere,
through.
Right.
And so it helps again with all bridging all of those pathways. And WG Indiana has been developing and testing an attainment wallet, which again is kind of a electronic credential of a transcript of skills and competencies that they can demonstrate mastery to accompany their regular transcript and a resume. So those things I think are looking forward, and the conversation I've been in the past year here in North Carolina, it's honestly, skills is dominates almost every conversation right now with post-secondary ed, and it's fascinating.
I'm going to guess we're about in the same age. So when we came out, a high school diploma was everybody had to get a bachelor's degree. Well, the bachelor's degree has pretty much become the high school diploma of our generation, right? Mm-hmm. And so yes, everybody's looking to the master's degrees, the certifications, those credentials that said you've done the work and it's practical application of that work, right? So there's especially in the IT realm, nursing, those kind of things. And so when we're looking at translating that, and someone that may have decided, you know, for whatever reason, maybe I keep getting notices of all the people I went to grad school retiring, right? And so it's like, at 55, they're retiring. Well, most of us have 30 years left at that point, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
what is their next career? I can't foresee anybody that have sent me their retirement notice is just sitting there for 30 years.
That's right. The porch swing doesn't stay up for 30 years.
Right. And so it's like, if they're coming in, WGU sounds like a place that they would fit. Adult learner, next career. Maybe they weren't IT savvy for years, but they find something attractive about cybersecurity and all the internet and all this stuff. So that's another generation coming in for that next career, that next thing, maybe being a business owner next, and maybe it's in cybersecurity or something that they've always wanted to explore, and they have the time, they have the financial resources, and now it's there. So we know our workforce is changing. We're going to have broader age groups, the 18 to the 85 or ever how old we live to be. How does that play into answering that workforce 2030 demand? What we need, how many workers, the skill sets, you can quantify them, identify them now, but where do we find our place in this, whether we are the 18-year-old or the 85-year-old that says, I still want to do something?
Well, it's interesting. Somebody just, I think last week, mentioned to me that our age gap in the students has ranged from 17 to 95.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I think that, again, in our time of history right now with coming out of the pandemic, hopefully, that, you know, there's been a lot of displacement in the workforce. And it's also a time of reflection of, you know, maybe I'm not so happy or achieving as much as I really would like to, or I've got a passion that I've always wanted to pursue, but I had to be pretty dogged about my, you know, doing this job just to make an income and a living. So we see a lot of students coming back to do either reskilling or retooling, if you will, getting these credentials that they pick up, and they can do that in a short amount of time. So it's not like, I have to wait for another 5 years before I can get positioned and ready to do this type of work. Again, the skills architecture is such a huge, huge topic. In fact, I was in a webinar a couple weeks ago, and Governor Cooper gave a kind of the closing recorded, you know, charge to this group, and said, and I believe it was Yancey Chamber, and he said that it was like he had been sitting along the whole 3 days of this institute, but he said that if you have noticed that there are hundreds of organizations here in North Carolina that are doing skills-based architecture, accelerated learning paths, all those things. And it's true. And I got exposed to many of those during that 3 day forum. And he said, again, the idea, the trick is to consolidate that and to build unity and how we can all kind of, because we're doing very parallel efforts. And I feel that we are better with, not better than. That's kind right. of my internal mantra at WGU. And we practice that. So there's a lot of places that are doing it. We're anxious to partner with it, get our word out and our message so that people have awareness of who we are, what we do, and what we can offer. And they're all good things. And they're not better than, they're just alternative ways that, and we have some students that do come out of high school and come directly to WGU. It's a small percentage, but again, the average age is 36, 37. So it's, there's a lot that comes with just that age group.
Yeah, but there's also a that younger generation that has, I'll just put it this way, a shorter attention span. They want to move faster. They want it on their customized path of what they're interested in. And so coming out of high school, maybe graduating early, I think my niece got her diploma at 16. So she needs to go anything, but she also wants it, what she wants to study. And I have to confess, I was that way as an going into undergrad too. I looked at the book and said, okay, I don't want to take intro classes. Oh, if I start the associate degree, I skip all the intro classes and go right into my business classes, then switch and have, you know, 36, 40 hours of extra time to put into what I wanted to do, because they had to waive all the intro classes because I'd already take the advanced classes. That was using the structured system now. But when she's looking at something, she wants what she wants the way she wants it now and doesn't see any reason why she couldn't. A WGU fits into that. 6 months, she can learn as much as she wants. She can come out with certifications and credentials. You can adapt to get her the skill sets, and she's getting a recognized degree at an affordable price that they can do.
Right. Right. And to the other point, that other point about your associate's degree, we have partnerships with many of the North Carolina Community College System campuses. We have very strong articulation agreements where students with an associate's degree can transfer to WGU. We do a deep dive on doing the credit transfer and nitpicking through every course to make sure they get the maximization of the credits so they can transfer over. And we have scholarships that are available for those students as well. So we have several things in place to help students that may have some college or may have an associate's degree, but want to do more. And we're also exploring the area of nano degrees and or non-degree offerings. There's different terms that are being used, but it's essentially it's kind of stacking together a condensed amount of core courses and built-in certificates that could, you know, come away as a smaller package, not a full degree, but again, something that is concise. It's soup to nuts within that micro degree or micro credential that, again, is highly attractive to employers really can, as you said, young students that are coming out of high school, that generation is very much about, I want to do things now and let's get with it. So that accommodates their model that they, you know, if they have the direction and know kind of where they want to go career-wise, all the better.
Well, and it's fortunate that your business model, your structure works, whether it is that 16 or 17 year old or that 95 year old that still, you know, thinks they have a lot of time left and a lot to give there, or they've just always wanted to do it, right? So that flexibility, that skills focus is really attractive to any age and to any business needing to get the workforce and get in there and have someone that can articulate their skill sets, that know how this is going to plug in. Because that's what you see, you know, you get the canned resume with the little statement at the top and some of the positions, but the position doesn't tell me and the job title doesn't tell me what you can do for me.
Precisely.
And that's the conversation that it sounds like you guys are centered around and building around. So you're actually responding to multiple audiences, multiple customers, and that you're educating one, but you're providing a workforce for the other. And then the larger community ecosystem of the business and everything in there is that you're taking in all of those needs and demands and putting together programs that provide those solutions.
And employers have smelled the coffee. That's exactly what they're into. It makes hiring, making good hires, good choices on people coming in that can be productive from day one, and be a viable contributor to their job and to the organization. And so they recognize that those skills that they have identified for a given position is what they're looking for. And the resume, as you said, you know, in the past, it wouldn't have those skills. It would just list a degree or job experience. But the skills are the transferable. And we're not the only one. I mean, community colleges are doing this. The fact is that it's just so much a part of the conversation. And we do a lot of work with employers. And we just developed an agreement with Amazon, with McDonald's, Walmart. I mean, we have very large partnerships, you know, nationwide, as well as in North Carolina. But all of the conversations we're having with employers, they say, you know, we have these skills that we need filled. And as you pointed out earlier, it may be a hospital, but they have IT needs. So it's not just we need nurses, we need healthcare administrators, we need family nurse practitioners, you know, we
need cybersecurity.
Yes.
You need the accountant,
network administrator.
I mean, yeah, there's
moving to the cloud.
Yeah.
All those things. And so they transcend those programs that we have. And in fact, many of our degree programs are part of it is taught in another college, College of Health Professions versus the College of Business. So you may be getting a master's in business administration, but there may be a concentration in healthcare administration. So we have that infrastructure built into our courses and programs here at WGU.
I could talk to you for another hour, but we're coming up. We're in the last few minutes of this, and you're welcome to come back and talk about any of these other topics in more detail anytime. But what's one thing we need to know that we haven't talked about in these last few minutes? And then how can they reach out to WGU?
Well, thank you for that. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Lee, and to learn from you. I guess the one thing that I would say is that there, in my year that I've been here, there seems to be a misinterpretation of who we are. And we are here, we're located in Durham as our headquarters. We are part of a national online university, but we're WGU North Carolina, and we are educating North Carolina citizens who pay their taxes and are should be available to have financial assistance from the state and all those kind of things. But we're contributing back, and the biggest mystery or the myth buster, if you will, is that we are a nonprofit and a nonprofit university. And I think that many of us consider us, you know, a for-profit type. So that's kind of my big message to folks is who we are and that we're located here in North Carolina and we're educating North Carolina citizens that are turning around and contributing to our workforce needs. Our website, of course, yes. But I think it's a very user-friendly website. There's areas there for you to reach out and contact people. Our enrollment counselors are like none other. In fact, I fill out an application just to see if I'd get a call back, and I barely had hit submit and I received a phone call, and it was a kind human being on the phone. It wasn't a recorded message. So again, we're very student centric. Everything we do is centered around the student, and it's I knew about this with WGU and I was clamoring to get here. I'd applied for 3 other jobs while I was applying for this one, and we have some great things happening here and some wonderful people that work here.
That's fabulous. So website, wgu.edu?
wgu.edu, yes.
Is there a backslash NC or just WGU?
You could do backslash North Carolina, or you could just do a Google search for WGU North Carolina, and it will take you to our programs and talk about our affiliate here in North Carolina. And by all means, I'm available to be contacted,
you're all on LinkedIn because we've already connected on LinkedIn. I know, so LinkedIn. They can find you on your LinkedIn page.
And that people can see how old I am because if they add up all the years of things I'm on my third or fourth career, and they'll say, "Well, goodness, over 100." But I'm available, and we'd love to talk with folks, employers, and prospective students alike.
I want to say thanks to Dr. Ben Coulter for joining us on Focus on Business and for sharing his insights on the workforce, on skills-based education, adult learners, veterans in transition, and all these wonderful topics we've been talking about. Dr. Coulter, I hope you join us again on the program to dig into some more of these fascinating topics that are impacting our lives on a daily basis. And again, wgu.edu for more information on programs and opportunities. And everyone, we've come through so much and had so many transitions in our lives. We're lifelong learners, hopefully, at this point, and we know what our small businesses and our communities need, and we're looking to the future. So I hope you continue to look for the future. Stay focused on those important things. And remember your local community radio station. We're here because we care and because you support our programs. You've been listening to Focus on Business on WCOM FM LP 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. For more information on how you can get involved with WCOM FM, a particular program that you want to support, become an underwriter, donate, participate in some of our community events, visit the website wcomfm.org and click on donate, or get more information, reach out to our board and our leadership. We're on the air because you care, and we are the voice of your community. Focus on Business is underwritten by FocusResourcesINC.com. If you would like to underwrite Focus on Business or any of the programs on WCOM FM,
go to our website, wcomfm.org, and click on Underwrite or Donate, or just contact us and we'll get you with the programs that you want to support and tell you how that you can keep your favorite programs on the air.